this special episode of Post Show Recaps about This Is Us is sponsored by TrueCar. Nicole, you ready to talk about TrueCar?
Oh my God, yes.
If you're ready to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You know what that means, right?
Yeah.
You might even know what it stands for. But what about invoice, list price, dealer price? It's enough to confuse anybody, not you, I'm sure.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
All you really want is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including the fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. Do they have any car stories on This Is Us?
Actually, funny that you mention it, that next week's episode, actually Tuesday's episode, is titled The Car.
Spoiler alert. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one that you want, all from the comfort of your home, which I love because I don't want to go anywhere.
He never leaves.
And how do you
do all the driving.
How do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car will show you what other people paid for the same car that you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set up True Price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
This Is Us, Season 2, Episode 15, is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. You guys, I'm so excited to be talking about this amazing show that's been kind of the hit of the last 2 years. It's been the show around which we kind of base all of our armchair psychological discussions, but we are here to talk specifically about the post-Super Bowl episode of this NBC phenomenon. My name is Jessica Leese, and with me here, you know her as the first lady of podcasting, making a rare appearance outside of her many awesome conversations with Rob. I'm going to have an awesome conversation today with Nicole Cesternino. Hello, Nicole.
I'm still fugly crying.
Oh, here's some Kleenex.
I'm just using my shirt. It's fine.
Okay, good, good. You got your like Steelers jersey on. We are pretty devastated here to find out, finally, over many seasons, this has been teased out, and here we are, and I know you have lots of thoughts that have been simmering in the crock pot of your brain, and I am ready to get them all.
That was too soon.
It was a little too soon, although we've known about the crock pot for how long now?
Yeah. Did you get rid of your crock pot? Be honest.
I honestly used it this morning.
Oh, and terrible.
It is old and the switch does not work properly. And I was thinking, I should probably replace this.
Yeah.
And then I realized I'm basically living out everybody's worst nightmare.
Completely.
Yeah. So, Nicole, tell me a little bit, like, are you a season one, day one This Is Us watcher?
I first started watching, I binge watched it. I think I got in like season one, episode 5, and then just been, like, I watched it like all in one night, which is very, very unusual for me. And then I've just been hooked since.
Yeah, it's so bingeable.
It's very bingeable.
It's one of those ones where, like, I started, I think around the same time you did, I was on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that first episode, not a great thing to watch when you have a week old baby.
Oh, yeah. Totally hormonal. No way.
It was the worst. Like, I was trying to describe to my husband, I went in knowing nothing about it except that it's this critically acclaimed show and the premise is it's all of these people that have the same birthday. And I thought, that could be interesting. I'll watch the pilot. And then I couldn't describe it to my husband without ugly crying. Like, even when I was telling him the events that happened in the pilot, I think it's really maybe the strongest pilot to hit network television since Lost.
That pilot was pretty amazing. Like, you didn't see any of that coming. And then at the end, when they, you know, reveal that everybody, their, you know, the relationship, how it's in the past and how it's in the present, it was just like, it slapped you in the face.
Yeah, it was so emotional. And
yeah.
I think, like, even people that don't have tiny babies on their laps while they're sitting through this, and it's amazing to me, I think, not only that this was such a strong pilot, but that it's managed to kind of keep that same emotional level throughout the course of the series.
Every single episode.
Yeah, they bring some new wrinkle. And I think we'll get into this. It's been mixed degrees of success. And I think they try, sometimes I can tell they're trying very, very hard to manipulate the viewer into feeling a certain way about something that's really not that impactful. But then they come out of nowhere with an episode like the Super Bowl episode, and I think the episode leading up to it, and they bring you right back to that place you were at the end of the first episode.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, it's great. So before we get into specifically what happened with the events of the post-Super Bowl episode that we just finished watching, you want to maybe get in a little bit about the trajectory of the characters. Like, is there anybody in particular that you really, really love and you that you think has been written particularly awesomely?
I think pretty much everybody could agree that Jack is just this amazing character where you don't know if you want him to be your husband or your father. Like, he is just, you know, he's pretty perfect.
Yeah, he is. And I think some of that is down to the fact that you're kind of seeing him through the eyes of his children and his wife. So they've built him up to be sort of larger than life, and they get into that. They keep acknowledging he's a human man, and then the flashback they show is him being superhuman.
Yeah, which we find out that he's not.
Yes, he's definitely had some failings, and I think they got into some really dark territory, I think, leading up to the big reveal, or the big gradual reveal, because let's be real, we got this in several stages.
Right.
And for a long time, the show was kind of just pushing us toward this, how does Jack die? And I think sometimes at the expense of the emotional resonance, we're just kind of sitting there thinking, oh, is this how it happens? Is this how it happens? Oh, it's a fire. Oh, but it's the crock pot. Oh, but it's this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the show is at its best when we're just looking at the characters.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of glad that we finally have figured out, or we finally have found out how Jack died, so we can stop worrying about it, because it doesn't really change the story, because he was always dead.
That's true. They're not going to, at the last minute, be like, oh, psych, he's, you know, he went to France and...
Although I was really hoping for that.
that would have been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are going to fake your own death, do it in a fire.
I've heard that before in the news.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, he is kind of the beating heart of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've very smartly wrapped it up when they needed to. And it doesn't mean that, you know, the nonlinear narrative nature of the show means that we can go back, and he's not going to be permanently dead, even though he's been quote unquote killed off.
Right. And there's so many stories left to tell about Jack. Like, there's like the entire, you know, when they're babies, when they're children, when they grow up in teenage years. And then there's the story about his father. I'm sure they're going to dive into that. And then his brother, like what happened to his brother?
Yeah, that was one of those things. I felt like this was a very Lostian moment to me, was when they revealed that it was his brother with him in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And they never really went down that road again. But now I'm sure we're going to go back to it. We're going to kind of take a little detour one of these episodes and go that direction.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right in their back pocket. It's another story that just shows us, you know, how Jack became who he is.
Yeah, and there's definitely, we know a lot about him already, but there are definitely areas that still bear some explanation.
He has a lot of secrets that I think are going to come out.
Yeah, for real. And I think this could also start to maybe deflate the larger-than-life persona that he is to his children.
I think so, too.
I love the idea of them finding out things about him 20 years after his death.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I mean, it could be done badly, but I think the way that they've done things on this show so far, they're going to do it competently.
Yeah, I think they know what they're doing. I think they got the Jack thing down.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Milo Ventimiglia is not an actor whose work I've really enjoyed up until this point, but I think he's perfectly cast here, as are pretty much everybody on this show.
Yes. Milo. Yes. So perfect.
I mean, there's no weak link here, and
it's funny that when I first saw him in Heroes, I could not stand his character and then therefore Milo. And every time I saw him, I just rolled my eyes and I was like, oh, I don't like this guy. And then he was in Rocky and I kind of started coming around to him. And then with this, he's just so perfect in this role.
Yeah. And he's.
And the beard helps.
Yeah, the beard helps. And he does a pretty... yeah. Yeah, I think you could take a an actor who's not particularly hot and like slap a beard on him, and all of a sudden it kind of gives him a gravitas.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the beard.
Yeah. Yeah, so he can keep the beard.
Yes, that's why I made Rob grow one.
Oh, is that why that happened?
He's my Jack Pearson.
Of course. And, you know, you have your beautiful children to...
I do feel like Rob is very, very similar to Jack, which is like why I feel like I have this like deep affection towards Jack, because I feel like I'm living with my own Jack Pearson.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, don't tell him.
I won't tell him. Your secret's safe with me, and he's never going to listen to this because he doesn't watch the show.
And he's not going to edit this or anything.
No, definitely not. So, yeah, so... After Jack, we've, of course, got Rebecca, who Mandy Moore is an actress that I think a lot of people were not expecting the kind of performance that she has given in this role.
Have you seen A Walk to Remember?
I have not.
Okay. That was like my teeny bopper years. And it was like this big, what is his name? Nicholas Sparks, I believe, was the author of the book, and the movie was created from the book, and it was like this big giant movie when we were teenagers, and it was like she was this dying girl, and we go through like her journey. And when I was a teenager, I remember actually watching this with Rob's sister, and it was like the most amazing movie, this amazing love story. And back then we thought that she was so fantastic in it. And I feel like she really didn't do anything since then.
Yeah, she's been here and there. Like, there have been guest spots on sitcoms. And, of course, she's had her music career where she releases mostly music that's very poppy. And then every so often she comes out with a covers album where she's done all this, like, super nerdy, deep cut covers of things that, you know, 50-year-old men listen to. And it kind of hints that she's got some hidden depths to her. And I think this is... really the first seriously dramatic role she's had since she played that dying teenager so long ago.
It was so good.
Yeah, I've never seen that, but I feel like all of the Nicholas Sparks movies, I think if you've seen one,
they're
you kind of know
same.
How they all end.
They're all the same.
But it uniquely qualifies her for this role because this is also a show that's about loss and coping with tragedy, although it might be slightly deeper than the Nicholas Sparks.
How dare you?
I know. And I think we also have to give a shout out to the makeup because I really do disappear. I think she disappears into this role and I forget completely that she's still, you know, in her 30s playing a 72-year-old woman.
Yeah, she's 33 years old. I was watching this with Rob last night. I never watch this with him. I watch it by myself. I always get a glass of wine and I sit in my bed and I go under the covers and I watch the show. But last night, because it was after the Super Bowl, I was watching it with Rob and he was really surprised that it was still like Mandy Moore and not a different actress to come in and play the older Rebecca. And I think it's an amazing, wonderful choice that they did this, where they have her all done in makeup and just playing the same character throughout, the timeline.
Yeah, and she is young looking enough that she can kind of go back and like play herself before the twins, and then she flashes forward in such a great way, and she manages to also kind of internally bring something to that I think not every actress would be able to do.
Yeah, yeah. And she's so beautiful.
She really is.
Yeah, hate her.
Yeah, and I think one of the great mysteries, and I think something, this is probably the next big mystery that the show is going to tackle, now that they have explained in exhausting detail every single event that leads up to the death of Jack Pearson, I think the next big mystery they have to tackle is, how did she end up with Miguel?
Yes, the ever-hated Miguel. He's like the most hated character in all of television.
So really, people hate him?
Oh my God, yes. There is major hate for Miguel that they talk about it on the interviews that they do when they go on like the late night shows. And I think I read an article that Milo had said about Miguel, like, oh, yeah, Miguel gets no love, but don't worry, he's going to earn it. So that's hopeful.
Yeah, and I mean, if any show can do it, I think this one can. But
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I could ever like Miguel. Like, I don't think so. You like him?
You know, I find him sympathetic, and I think the moment that did it for me was the episode where they all go to Kevin's rehab.
Uh-huh.
And the therapist says basically anybody who's not a blood relative has to leave.
Uh-huh.
And so you end up with Beth and Toby and Miguel getting drunk together while everybody else is at rehab.
The new big three.
Yes, the new big three. And he goes off on this like Shakespearean soliloquy about how everybody doesn't understand the sacrifice he makes. And like, he knew Jack better than anybody. And the actor is really chewing on the scenery. And I'm thinking, there is a story here. And because I want to know that story so badly, I want to know what brought these people to this place. I know it's not cheap. I know they're going to earn it. That makes me like him a little bit more.
And it's all Facebook's fault.
No, it's all Facebook's fault.
Facebook is responsible for a lot of bad relationships. And maybe some good ones.
That is true. You know, social media is just a minefield.
Yes, yes. And I was talking with someone the other day about Miguel, and it's just like hit the pass where when he's with Jack and just he's kind of a douche where he's like, almost like cheating on his wife. He's hitting on other women at the bars. He's trying to get Jack to, you know, not be with his family on his birthday. I mean, it seems like he just has like a different, you know, character than Jack does. So it seems like a total downgrade from, you know, Jack Pearson for Rebecca to go towards, you know. So there has to be like a really good storyline coming up with Miguel to get her to change her mind, I would think.
Yeah, well, I think just like we have this vision of who everybody thinks Jack is, I think we also have this vision of whoever everybody thinks Miguel is. And mm-hmm. I think the real story for both of these men is somewhere in the middle, and they've got more in common than just Rebecca having married them. So
yeah.
I do think it makes sense to not really like him. And he was, I think the first time we saw him before we knew any of this, he was kind of icky.
He's kind of icky, yeah.
Yeah. And then the big reveal, like, oh, and here comes Grandma, and oh, it's also Grandpa Miguel. And it takes a minute to realize, oh, it's that guy. It's the icky guy.
Why and then once you realize, yeah, once you realize, you're like, no!
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to begrudge old Rebecca some happiness in her life, but I think at that point, maybe we didn't trust the show enough to believe that we're going to get something good out of that.
Yeah. Do you think that, God forbid, that something happened to your husband and you married his best friend? Do you think he'd like that?
I don't think he would, and I'm pretty sure I can't envision any universe in which that happens.
Yeah, it seems kind of crazy.
It does. It does. Or even, like, and not even, like, even if it's not his best friend, even if it's just, like, the guy that hits the bars and, like, behaves badly.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell Rob that if God forbid something happens to me, I just want him to cry every day and miss
yeah,
me.
Well, I'm sure he will.
well, hopefully we don't have to find out.
Yeah, let's never find out. Mm-hmm. All right. So, and then we have the Pearson children. We have the big three. And I think these are some storylines that have been very uneven over time. I know that particularly Linda Holmes over at NPR has a big problem with the way that Kate is written, and I'm interested to hear what you think of Kate so far.
Yeah, so I had actually I read Linda Holmes's tweet, and she's very hung up on the writing for Kate, that she only worries about her weight. Like, that's her character. It's her weight. I did find myself finding Kate as the most irritating character on the show. Although her with Toby has kind of changed my opinion of her, because we're seeing a little bit more. We're seeing her come around and, you know, break through some of the things that are keeping her back in her head. But I kind of get where she's saying, but I do think that this is going somewhere. I mean, she's a big girl. And this is obviously a problem that she deals with every day. So, of course, that's going to be something that is, you know, holding her back. I mean, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And I think it would be way too neat for us to just say, oh, she met a guy and she fell in love and that fixed everything. And suddenly she was confident about herself.
Right.
And I do think that Toby sometimes falls into that manic pixie dream guy trope.
Right.
Where
he's the Jack Pearson.
He's very Jack Pearson-esque. He wants to inject whimsy into her life and make her believe in herself. And you see the parallels.
Yeah.
With especially the way they both try to, you know, encourage her singing career. And but I also think that it's been very real that Kate didn't fall for that and doesn't fall for that on the regular. Like, mm-hmm. Toby helps her. He props her up. He's a good partner. But she also is insecure and she falls off the wagon and gets back on the wagon and realizes that she can't wait for herself to lose the weight for her life to start. And I think in the early days, it really was all about weight, weight, weight. But over time, we've gotten to know a lot more about Kate. We've found things that she has wanted to do with her life. And I thought that the story of her having a miscarriage was really especially powerful and well done.
That's what's great about the show, is that they're not afraid to tackle these things. Like, and those topics aren't really, you know, talked about, and they hit it. I found that especially difficult to watch, having gone through that, and to see her tackle that was, I liked it. It was good, and I'm sure that it helped other people.
Yeah, it's one in four pregnancies and nobody ever talks about it. So yeah, that was really, it was something to see people coping with it and not have it just be like a convenient way for somebody to not be pregnant, which I think like every other time I've ever seen it handled on a show, that's how they've gone with it. And it's felt very callous.
Yeah. Yeah. And they go through the loss and it's real.
Yeah. It's very real. And I think Kate has done a lot of growing, especially at the beginning. She also felt like she was just in Kevin's shadow the whole time.
I think that was a safe place for her, though.
Yeah, it definitely made sense for the character at the time. And I think meeting Toby kind of pulls her out of that a little bit. But he's a complicated guy, too. He's not without his flaws. And there have been times when I've wanted to smack him.
Yeah, there have been times. But also, like, another one-dimensional character, I mean, you could even say that Kevin was slightly one-dimensional. Like, we've had a few episodes where we're seeing a little bit more with him, but there are complaints that he's pretty 1D as well.
Yeah, the whole first season, I think anything that was happening with Kevin, I wanted to fast-forward through.
Yes, but then when you look at him, you don't want to fast-forward through that.
Well, there's that. Maybe I just hit the mute button.
Hit the mute button, that's more like it.
Yeah, like the whole thing, I really could not have been less interested when he walks off the set of The Manny and wants to be a serious actor. But
that felt so LA.
Point, it was very LA. And he goes to New York and he thinks that he can kind of take over New York and it just does not happen for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that they did that it was just, it wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't. And he's had kind of ups and downs. And I think this season in particular, I didn't love the whole, you know, becoming addicted to everything in the course of three episodes and then going to rehab and all of a sudden not being addicted to anything anymore. It felt a little bit forced to me, but it also gave us the opportunity to go a little deeper into him and to see that he's kind of the ultimate people pleaser because he doesn't feel like he's either one of his parents' favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is also a really real thing as well. He didn't get a lot of attention because he didn't need it. And it affected his entire life.
Yeah, and I think it's been very sensitive to, he kind of craves this attention and he feels like he needs to be this super success. And then when he falls down, he really doesn't feel like he has the relationships to back it up.
And he doesn't because he's so superficial.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I like where he's going now. And I think we got a lot of questions about this. Like, where do we think his character is going to go now? Because it doesn't seem like he's going to go right back into acting, but he's got to do something. And I think, like, the last episode where he's just kind of hanging around helping Randall, I think was the most Kevin I feel like we've seen.
I feel like that's where it started. Like, that opened up a whole new Kevin for us. It opened up a new relationship with him and Randall, because him and Randall were not close. And that really opened a big door for Kevin.
Yeah. And I think Randall in particular, you never see him relate to Kate and Kevin the way that Kate and Kevin relate to each other. And part of this is because he feels so different, because his identity is so different as the adopted child and as a black child in a white family. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I feel like the writers have known exactly what to do with Randall throughout the entire series, where I don't think that's been true of the other two.
I could see that. But I think that the writers, I think they know what they're doing, and I think they know where they're going.
Yeah, I think they have a destination in mind, but I think Randall, even though he seems unmoored right now, the whole first season, they knew they wanted to take him to meet his father and to, like, have his father come into his life and get the whole backstory. And of course, William was an amazing character, played amazingly by Ron Cephas Jones. And of course, Sterling K. Brown is amazing as Randall.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves every award that he's gotten so far. And that trajectory kind of brought him to where we thought he'd end up. But I think it was the most thought out plot arc of all of the big three.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a complicated issue with him.
It is, and I think he's had the most on his plate.
Mm-hmm.
And he started out at the beginning of the series, you'd look at all three of them and you'd say he's probably the one that's got his head on the straightest of all of them. And then as you get to know him better, you find out that's really, he's had a lot to deal with, and internally, maybe he doesn't cope with it as well as you might think.
Yeah, and he's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Hot dad.
I mean, did you get the hot dad apron for Rob yet?
Not yet. It's on order. Amazon.
Okay, good.
But oh my God, we have to talk about this episode.
Yes, we definitely, this is what we're here for,
yes,
is to talk about this episode. And I think the big surprise to start with is, I think we all assumed that Jack went into that burning house and then never came out.
Well, let me tell you something, Jessica. I wrote down my prediction.
Oh, and what did you predict?
I wrote, Jack will not die in the fire. Jack will die in the hospital related to the fire, but will not die in the fire.
What?
I did. I have the proof. I have the proof. I have it on a piece of paper that Rob has in his pocket.
Amazing.
Yes, I did my Insta story while before the show aired, and I said, I am going to write down my prediction, because everyone has their ideas of what's going to happen. And I wrote down my prediction and I gave it to Rob on my Instagram story, and I said that I was going to reveal it on our podcast tonight. And there it is.
That's amazing.
I dinged myself.
Congratulations. So are you excited about being right? Are you disappointed that you weren't taken in a surprising direction? How are you feeling about this?
I think that the way that they handled his death was pretty spot on. I think that him, you know, having this gruesome death in the fire would have been way too much and would have taken, like, a really dark and yucky, terrible turn. Like, that would have been just way too gruesome. So I'm happy that they had, like, that moment, their moments to, you know, be with their dad or their husband, where he got to say, I love you. And then he went to the hospital and then it all happened there. And you know what? It also makes it a bit more relatable to people, to the viewers watching, because I would say just about everybody can relate to having that kind of loss where it's unexpected. It's not gruesome. It's just really unexpected. And that's where the show does really a really great job of just giving you the feels and hitting home for people.
Yeah, that's true. And I thought Mandy Moore's reaction with the candy bar was especially poignant because she's sitting there.
Why? Because her hit song was "I'm Missing You Like Candy."
I had kind of forgotten that song. But she is sitting there with the candy in one hand and still kind of in shock, trying to process what's going on, a little bit in denial, and she takes a bite as she's mulling this all over. I thought
she did that perfectly.
It was spot on. And I mean, I think we also have to bring Jack back to the hospital where the story began.
Right.
Because we have to bring back Dr. K because we need more Gerald McRaney on this show.
I lost it in the coming attractions on the that he came back. Like, that made me lose it.
Yeah. Well, if you had any of it left to lose after this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I had nothing left.
Yeah. And I was browsing Reddit before we came on to talk about this, and someone pointed out that at the end of the pilot episode, Jack is standing in the baby nursery and a fireman offers him a smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up at the end of his life in the same hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With his lungs full of smoke.
Yes.
Oh, I did not catch that. But that is the writers of This Is Us. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think they've got it all in their heads. And I think they tend to... I think with a lot of shows where the trajectory is clear to the writers, mm-hmm. you end up having these detours, and they've pretty much ensured there are going to be infinite detours with this show. But there have been episodes, like, in particular, I'm thinking about the one where we spent the whole episode talking to that firefighter who thinks he's going to adopt Randall, and his wife says, "What, you're crazy?" And he's like, "Okay, fine, I'll take Randall to the hospital."
Yeah.
That was one of those ones where I'm thinking, you know, they have a big reveal in store for us and they wanted to hold it for another week.
Yeah. There was also, I was rewatching the first episode not too long ago, and they do make Mandy Moore or Rebecca. She says she comes out. It's Jack's birthday and he comes out, you know, butt naked with his butt to the screen. And yep. Sorry, I had to mention that. And Mandy Moore comes out. Rebecca. I don't like that I call her Mandy Moore. It's Rebecca. It's Rebecca. So Rebecca comes out and he's in his birthday suit. It's his birthday. He turned 36 and she comes out. Everything is about tradition with the Pearsons. And the tradition is she does the birthday dance and she's 8.5 months pregnant with triplets. And she's like, "Really? You want me to do this? Do you see what I look like?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Bring it on." And she goes, "Oh, it's your funeral." And then he's like, "There's just one, you know, the writers put that right in there." And there was another one shortly after that. I forget exactly what it was, but it's in the same like reference to his, you know, his death that's coming up.
Yeah, I think at that point, correct me if I'm wrong, we didn't even know he was dead yet.
We did not. We just saw his butt.
Yep. We had seen his butt, and the whole first episode is really like the origin story, and you don't know how much of a force he's going to be.
Right.
You spend the whole first episode like thinking basically that what's happening to him is taking place in the same time frame, and it's not.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't even occur to anybody until at least the second episode mm-hmm. that, oh, wait, he's not still here. He's not still in this.
Yeah, it's the what moment in every single episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me. Like, I saw that first episode and I thought, well, if they can deliver a twist like this every episode. And again, it's been mixed degrees of success. There are things we care about and things we don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
And they, every so often, I feel like they invent a tradition, or like they had the whole episode where we find out about how Rebecca made the birthday cupcake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, do we really need to know how she made a birthday cupcake? Couldn't she have just bought one?
Right.
That was a little bit much. But mm-hmm. I think if you take it as a whole and you can... I think it's eminently bingeable if you have your finger on the fast forward button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then... So let's go back to this episode because yeah. There's just so much to talk about here. So Jack wakes up, smells the smoke, figures out that there's a fire, and then he just automatically like becomes the hero, makes Rebecca get dressed, and now he goes to the kids, and he just knows what to do and goes into full hero mode.
Yeah, that felt a little bit forced. And I was trying to figure out the geography of this house because it seemed like he was explaining, oh, well, that side of the house, it's too high to get down. And I think like there's like a covered porch that juts out. And so they were coming down on top of that. Maybe.
Yeah, so I was thinking that it wasn't there from the other where the kids' bedrooms were. It was only, I guess, the master bedroom was in the front of the house, and the kids were like either on the side or in the back, where there was no like awning or whatever.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he leaps into it, and then he goes back in to get the dog. And not only does he get the dog, he gets like every important family memento.
Because that's Jack. That's what Jack does.
And also, if the stairs were on fire, how does he come out the front door?
Yeah, that whole thing seems unlikely. And the way that they showed just like the flames just like completely like engulfing the house, the flames start coming out the window. It seems pretty impossible that would happen, and he would survive, but he did. And he got the photos and the necklace and the videotape.
Yeah, and I think everybody assumed the dog was going to die.
Ah, that dog. I hold that dog responsible for this.
Yeah, everything is the dog's fault. And it's, I guess it's no wonder Kate didn't want another dog.
I don't think I could ever want a dog after that.
Yeah, that was rough. Although that's a very cute dog that she ended up with.
It was pretty cute. That dog was really cute.
Much cuter than the one Jack saved from the fire.
Much cuter than Louie.
Yes, Louie is not a cute dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I was expecting, like, especially you had these slow motion close-ups of everybody's terror on their face. Like, he went back in, and you're assuming he's not going to come out. Everybody except you.
I knew
assuming,
it.
And you knew it. And
I also have like, you know, I have a medical background. I'm a nurse. So I did have my like I know how it works. And I did get a lot of questions about this that like, is it realistic what happened that he would survive the fire and then die of a heart attack in the hospital and then not catch it? And I normally don't like to, I normally love actually to hate shows for their bad medical, medical decisions. And I like to point it out. That's why I had to stop watching Grey's Anatomy because it was just too much for me. And there was too many mistakes. But with this show, I kind of don't want to do that because I love it so much. But I mean, the show, the fire takes place in like 1997, 1998. I started my education as a nurse like in 2000, I think, something like that. So it definitely like I don't know if there a lot changed since then. But with my education, I would think that if he came into the ER with these severe second degree burns on his arms, he would be hooked up to a monitor, which he was. And by the looks of the monitor, it was like old and not very sophisticated. And if they would have just like checked his oxygen saturations, it probably would be steadily declining. And the oxygenation from his burnt lungs would not be bringing oxygenated blood to his body and therefore affecting the heart. Like it is like what happened is definitely possible, but I feel like we would have seen a steadier decline in him and his vitals and the way that he deteriorated. Although I do think that watching Jack, that he knew how bad it was, and he was in a lot of pain. Like imagine your lungs just burnt. Like that's really, really painful. And they said that his heart rate was up, which is an indicator that something's going on. But I mean, I feel like they would have been like a little bit more on alert for the situation.
Yeah, that seems right to me. Don't they test the oxygenation with a monitor that they put on your finger? And isn't he kind of all burnt up to measure that? Like, I'm sure they have other ways to do it, but
I don't know what they had in 1997. I know what they have now, and there's definitely equipment where you put it on your finger, but you could also put it on your toe or your ear or your forehead. I don't think that they had that sophisticated equipment back then. But I would think it would be something that they would still try to monitor.
Yeah, they. It seems like it. I mean, maybe this is the problem with the Pearson traditions. Like, maybe going back to the same crappy hospital all the time just because you like that one doctor who's not even treating you.
Yeah.
Maybe you should go to the state-of-the-art hospital. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, it was a community hospital?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was, but it looked like they never redecorated since the triplets were born.
It's still the same 17 years later.
Yep, exactly
the same. Equipment, yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, no wonder they didn't have the thing that goes on your finger.
Yeah.
So we have that going on in the late 90s storyline. And then we have the present day storyline,
mm-hmm.
Where we have Randall kind of going into overdrive to bury what happened on Super Bowl Sunday. You have Kate who wallows, and you have Kevin who finally confronts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the studying contrast between all three of them. And then you have Rebecca, who's making a lasagna for some reason.
What's his favorite?
It's his favorite lasagna. But I thought that was kind of a weak response when we're diving into, like, Kate watching the video a million times and sobbing, and Kevin sitting under the tree and sobbing, and Randall kind of stamping everything down the way Randall does. And Rebecca's like, well, I'm going to make a lasagna.
I guess it's hard to really wallow when you're married to the best friend. Although he did give her space. And you know what? Kudos to Miguel. Like, it's really hard to be married to someone who's still married to a ghost. And like he'll never have 100% of her. And that's kind of sad.
That is a little sad. I mean, all the LaCroix water in the world is not going to fill that hole in his relationship.
Yes. So, so Miguel, he knows enough to give her space where she can make her lasagna for one, and is waiting for her Jack moment where he speaks to her.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of cute. And I liked the tie-in at the end where she realizes, oh, no, it's Kevin coming back into our life and moving into our basement. That's the Jack moment.
I thought that was so sweet and just so and so perfect for both of them, because they need each other right now. Like, I don't want to say they didn't have each other, but they didn't have each other in the way that they both, I think, wanted to when Kevin and Rebecca were younger. And now here they are coming out of this post rehab thing, and they're together and they both need each other and they're going to be there for each other. And I think this is a good thing for them moving forward.
Yeah. Well, especially since a lot of the flashbacks that we've seen from Kevin recently have been about him feeling like he doesn't connect to anybody in his family. And for various reasons, like some of which are his own choosing and some of which are just circumstantial, to have him kind of come back full circle and really, maybe for the first time, feel like he's really included.
Like he's part of the family.
Yeah, like he's truly part of the family. He's not like sleeping on the floor where everybody else is like in one corner of the room.
Yeah, but sometimes you want to be like, wah, wah, poor Kevin, and like slap him.
Yeah, it's hard to be so good looking and charming all the time.
It's hard to be perfect.
It's hard to have beautiful women falling at your feet all the time.
Yes, but when you don't feel the love, then how do you feel complete?
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right. He's got some mommy issues, and now he's working those mommy issues out. And
mm-hmm.
It's all going to be fine for Kevin. I think that guy tends to land on his feet.
Yes, he does.
Yep. His NFL career is destroyed. He'll just become an A-list actor.
You think he's going to go back to acting after this?
I think he's going to find something new, and I think, knowing the way that television writing goes, I think it's likely going to be something that is widely perceived to be easy for a lot of people to do, but hard to necessarily be successful at. Like, I would not be surprised to see him write a novel.
Yeah.
Or start a podcast.
Who does that?
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody is successful doing a podcast.
No, nobody I know.
I could see him like deciding he's going to be a poet or something like that, and then there poetry is Randall's thing. It kind of rubs him the wrong way. I think he's going to find a new creative pursuit, and he's going to wind up being wildly successful at it, because I think that's Kevin's arc.
That's how he rolls.
Yeah, that's how he rolls.
Yeah.
But especially now that he's working things out with his extended family, I think things are looking up for Kevin. He's had a rough year.
Yeah. Let's talk about Randall and the way that he celebrates on this day.
Yeah, this got a little sitcom-y for me.
I loved it.
I don't know about the... I feel like I've seen this exact dead pet scenario
a million times. Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess it's good to see Randall get a little lighthearted, because I think he's had to deal with a lot of the heaviest stuff that's happened on the show.
Mm-hmm. And I like that it all just came out when Mr. McGiggles is no longer with us.
Yeah. It's better than like running out to the pet store at the 11th hour to find another one and then maybe not fooling Annie at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which could have happened.
Yeah, so I like that she stepped on him and then he went in the garbage, but not before totally setting off Randall into all the feels.
Yeah, that I think it just takes one tiny thing when he's pushing so much down and bottling everything up. I think it was bound to happen.
Yes, and then he compares losing Mr. McGiggles to tooth pain.
Yeah, he kind of went off the rails there. At the
but that's
point.
Randall. There's Randall.
Yep, that's Randall for you. So I think we're burying the lead here, though, Nicole. How did you feel about the flash forward?
Okay, I loved it, and I loved how it went over a lot of people's heads, and I love that.
I personally, it came out of nowhere for me. I don't know how I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I was actually really pissed because I love my husband dearly. I don't like to watch TV with him. And I made it very, very clear that this is my show. Zip it. And of course, at this point, he starts talking. And I literally was like, I stuck my hands in his face. And I was like, shush, mind blown right here. That's Tess. Shush. And he's like, should we rewind it? I was like, no, just be quiet. And it was amazing. I loved it. But I don't know if I love that. It's a possibility that the show is going to go like in the Lost direction with the flash forwards.
Yeah, that was the thing that occurred to me. Like, it was very Losty. And I mean, this whole show is kind of like it's a lower stakes Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really just focuses in on everybody's relationships and nobody introduces a polar bear and hopefully never will. And I think taking like the strongest aspects of storytelling, like, we'll introduce a mystery, but then maybe we explain it and then we go in a different direction. I think used sparingly, the fast forward could be very interesting, but I worry
used sparingly,
that,
yes. Yes.
Yeah, I worry they're going to rely on it a little too much in the coming episodes.
Yeah. Although it is very sweet that the message that they bring to the show, and this was a reflection of that, that it's just like, they're like these little things that we hold on to as kids just like totally, you know, shape us for the rest of our lives. And like this conversation and this experience with fostering from her parents created her entire future and her success in life. And that, you know, they held on to this moment where they still go out to dinner every week where she can tell her dad about, you know, everything. And like he said, he wanted her to tell him everything. And the traditions that Jack instilled on them, because everything is about traditions, still hold true, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah, and I love the line about how he was stressed out that he was not going to be a great dad. And then he realized that it just came naturally.
Although that's when you get cocky. And that's when I always tell people, when you say you're a good parent, you're not being a good parent.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like being funny or being smart. If you have to tell people you are, you probably aren't.
You probably aren't, yeah.
But I think in Randall's case,
he did have a good role model.
Yeah, he had a great role model.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always so up in his head about everything that he does,
mm-hmm.
that to realize that he didn't have to be up in his head about this and that it was something he was just going to do because it's the kind of guy he is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very powerful.
Because he just loved her and that was good enough to make him a good dad.
Yep. And arguably maybe good enough for Jack as well.
Yeah. I mean, Jack just loved his family.
Yeah, he did everything for them and, you know, remains, again, beating heart of the show.
Yeah. Let's also talk about Rebecca. I feel like Rebecca gets... People are really hard, like the family, the kids are really hard on Rebecca that they're, you know, everybody loves Jack. Jack is the perfect dad. He does everything right. But I think that Rebecca gets so much of the blame for being the mom for everything that goes wrong. Like she's to blame for, well, she was for a lot of Kate's insecurities because, you know, Rebecca was so perfect. She had this great singing voice. She was thin. She was gorgeous. That's, you know, she can't help that. And with Kevin, he had, you know, so much resentment for her because she gave, you know, Randall so much attention. But then we see now where after the fire, where she had to hold back her grief for her children because she had to be strong for her kids because she knew that this was going to ruin her life and she had to hold it together and she had to hold it together in that moment. And then she had to hold it together for, you know, the next, you know, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody was watching that and not ugly crying, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. It was fugly crying at this point.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, in an episode that was full of those moments. Mm-hmm. Like we're talking first 5 minutes of Up times the dumpster scene in Toy Story.
You did not go to the dumpster scene.
I went there. It was the same thing. Like you think everybody's gonna explode in a fireball and then they don't.
Yeah.
And then it becomes even more heartbreaking.
Jack is Woody.
He really is. And he got one last. Andy got to play with him one last time before. Giving him up forever.
Yeah. Womp womp.
I might need a break.
So anyway, so Rebecca, I feel like she's a really good mom that she doesn't get a lot of credit for. And I don't know whether it's because I just side with her because I'm a mom now, but I think that she is pretty amazing.
Well, she had the audacity to keep on living. I think that's her biggest problem. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get to be blown all out of proportion as the greatest mom ever because she's still around and she still has to answer for any perceived faults.
Right. And she gets lashed out against from Kate.
Yeah, in particular. And I love that relationship as well. The complexity of that.
I hate it.
I mean, it's hard to watch,
it's very hard to watch, and it makes me mad at Kate.
Yeah, I'm mad at Kate sometimes, and then I'm mad at Rebecca sometimes, because I think there's something that she's never going to understand.
Because Kate never told her. How can you understand something that you don't know anything about?
It's true, but also, how can you understand something that you've never experienced yourself? I think that's one of the things that I find so compelling about watching that dynamic. I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's hard to watch. Mm-hmm. And it makes me mad at both of them at various points. But I think there's a middle ground there that they just never quite reach.
Yeah. And I feel like I can argue this point for hours. And I just think that I'm sure Rebecca could have done things a little bit better. But I don't think she didn't realize, like, she tried so hard to be, like, she was just proud of her daughter. And I'm sure when she saw her daughter sing that a little bit of her, you know, like, lit up because, like, she saw herself and she has that love for singing and, you know, whatever. But, like, she made that dress for Kate, not because, like, she did it for Kate. Like, but I guess I can see that that was the first dress that she wore. And then she made it the first dress. I guess you can argue with that. Everything might have been about her now that I say that out loud.
Yeah. Well, I think that's at least how Kate sees it. It's like Kate has picked this vocation and, you know, subconsciously or not, it's got a lot tied up in what her mother was very good at. And she's inherited some talent, sure. But the fact that she wants to make a career out of it as her mother attempted to do, you can kind of see where Rebecca sees that as, oh, she wants to be just like me. And the truth of it is much more complicated.
Yeah, but I guess on the other hand, like if Dominic said that he wanted to go into podcasting, I'm sure, you know, Dad would be very, very happy about that. And he's the expert. So, of course, he's going to try to make him better, give him tips. It's not like in a malicious way. That's just a dad helping his child, which is in the same thing with Rebecca. It's the mom who's been there. She's done this and she's just, you know, trying to help her child maybe, you know, sing the note a little bit longer, project her voice, you know, so I could see where she's coming from.
Yeah, and it's one of the things, like, as someone who comes from a musical background, it's one of those things where I feel like Kate should have spoken up much sooner and gotten some good coaching very early on. And the fact that she just sort of decides senior year that she's going to apply to Berklee, which is a very well-regarded music school, mm-hmm. and doesn't really run the tape by anybody, doesn't appear to have a music teacher who's helping her along with all of this. I feel like she's not giving herself the best shot to take advantage of every resource she has.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that she's fearful because she lives in the shadow of her mother in her own eyes.
Right. And it is something she sees that her life could have gone differently if she had spoken up.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, she blames the fire for everything that went wrong in her life after that.
Yeah, which I'm sure we're going to see, you know, the aftermath of the fire and what goes down. And like, yeah, Jack did go in for the dog because he couldn't bear to see her upset.
Yep. And
but it was his choice.
Yep. He never has to see her upset again.
Oh.
Too soon.
Too soon. Yeah. Yeah.
But we do see, I'm sure, the repercussions of that are that Kate never pursues music. She doesn't go to Berklee.
No, she becomes a waitress. And she like goes to like a community college at this point. Like she goes, like she says that she goes to night school. So she just erased everything that was going to, you know, was going to be her future.
Right. And she was waitressing when she had the date with the married guy, right?
Yes. And yes. she was a student at that point.
Right. So, Nicole, do we have any other points in the episode that we want to touch on before we get to some of our listener questions?
Let's see. So we got the fire, we got the hospital, we got, I think we hit it. This was a great episode. This was the episode we've been waiting for. I did find myself not wanting to know how Jack dies, but I feel like a sense of relief in knowing, and now you can just enjoy the story a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. And I think shows that don't tie up their big mysteries and move on to other mysteries, I think they do it at their peril.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not think that they were going to reveal Jack's death so soon. And I was kind of disappointed that they were going to do it. And then as like the weeks led up to this, like I was like getting anxiety, like thinking about how Jack was going to die. And then I like 2 days before, I was like, I don't want to know. But now I do. I feel this sense of relief. And now we can just focus on Jack's life and how he lived and how he affected the kids and how his death then affected the kids and their future relationships.
Yeah, right. We don't ever really have to leave him, which is the beauty of how the show is structured.
Jack is always with us.
Yes.
Wipe your tears. Wipe those fugly tears. Jack is still with us.
Yes. And our hearts will go on.
Okay, Celine.
All right. So we asked for questions over in one of our chat groups for people that are patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. And if that's something that interests you, you get a lot of great perks if you become a patron at robhaspodcast.com/Patreon. And at different levels, you get access to exclusive content and you get access to Facebook groups where you can connect with other patrons and where you can get in on the questions. And so I'm going into Facebook now to pull up our questions, and I'll start with one from Amy Tinsley, who asks, any predicts on what happened with Deja's mom and if Deja will be here to stay? Is there a possible adoption?
I actually want to jump in before we answer the question. One of the best perks about becoming a patron is you get to listen to me every week.
Oh, that's right.
And no one else does. So
Nicole,
that will either
be exclusive content.
That will either deter you or make you want to join.
I think everybody's going to everybody's going to jump on that bandwagon because otherwise, like, you might get Nicole twice a year, but.
And that's not enough. Not enough.
It's definitely not enough. You get her once a week if you sign up to become a patron.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth it.
Yes.
All right, Amy Tinsley, what'd you say?
So, to our questions, Amy Tinsley wants to know, any predicts on what happens with Deja's mom and if Deja will be here to stay? Possible adoption?
See, there was another little twist where they were throwing you a bone, but then they threw it in the other direction.
Yeah, it's true. And I wonder, I thought that they had handled that situation pretty well when they wrapped it up before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to say that this is how the foster care system is actually built to function. You are supposed to take care of a child temporarily until her parents can take care of her, and then you have to give her up. And the fact that Randall came around to that, I thought that was tying it up very neatly, and now we're getting murky again.
Well, I think what's going to happen is something bad happened to her, and she's coming to them because she has nowhere else to go, and this is a safe place for her.
That's definitely true. It's probably the last place she felt very safe. And I think it was hard for her to navigate, like, wanting to be with her mother, but also really feeling comfortable where she was. And so to have her back on the doorstep, I just am not sure, like, how long we're going to see her for. Is this going to be wrapped up neatly in the next episode, or are we going to be bringing her back in semi-regularly?
I feel like having Deja on the show, people really liked her. She's a really good actress. And I think it made people happy having her on the screen and having that story. So I think from the writer's perspective, like, it's a good storyline.
Yeah, I think we definitely, it's great to see more of the actress, because I think, especially with younger actors, when you get one that's really good, you want to use them as much as possible.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting. It's going to be tough to bring that to a place that feels real and doesn't necessarily come off as, like, overly negative of Deja's situation or sensationalizes it in any way, which I think is a really big concern.
But I do think that the show and the writers are not afraid to go dark. So I would not be surprised if there was something that is really dark that may have happened.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be as simple as I had an argument with my mother and now I want to live here forever.
Yeah, she didn't have, like, a little bad dream, little nightmare where she's coming over, like, that something happened.
Yeah, I think the question is, like,
how do they handle it?
Yeah, I would imagine the next episode, there's going to be a Randall Deja road trip.
Road trip.
Yeah, not as, you know, maybe not quite as fraught as the Kevin Tess road trip.
Yeah.
Mandy Rhodes Billings wants to know, is it in the cloud or on the cloud?
I don't know. What do you say? I didn't know that there was this big distinction.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Damn you, Toby. Now I got to think about this.
Yeah, I mean, Toby really messes it all up. I always think I think of it as in the cloud, but it could be either way.
So what did he say? It was on the cloud? Or?
Yeah, I think Kate was saying that she wanted to put it on the cloud. And he's like, no, it's in the cloud.
I'm pretty sure it's in the cloud anyway. But yeah. Really?
Yeah, I think it's a hair you don't want to split when the love of your life is having a meltdown.
But that's Toby.
Yes.
And that would be Rob. Anyway.
Yep. Okay, so Michael J. Clark wants to know, what does Kevin's redemption story look like?
I think it's with his mom.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's got to wrap that up, but I think he's got a lot of amends to make. And, you know, they put him through rehab where there's a step where he has to apologize to everybody. And I think we've been down that road, but I think he's got a lot of loose ends to tie up with, I think, everybody that's left in his family.
Do you think that it's the end of Sophie and Kevin?
I don't think we see Sophie again. That feels pretty final to me.
I like to call them Sofin.
That's pretty good.
Are Sofin done?
I think Sofin are done, although I would not be surprised. Like, this could be one of those wells that they go back to when This Is Us gets renewed for, like, three seasons at once and they need some filler content. We'll have another episode where it looks like she's coming back.
Mm-hmm. I think she's a season regular, though.
Oh, she is?
I'm pretty sure she is.
So we may, I guess we if that's the case, we'll probably see her again. I know that the character probably shows up fairly often in the backstory because, P.S., that's my biggest question of the episode. Like, am I just a prude? Am I going to be one of these really restrictive parents? But what parents are okay with it when a teenager is just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to my romantic partner's house. I'm spending the night. See you later.
So I'm
going to
go bang my girlfriend.
They seemed oddly cavalier with that.
They did. I mean, that did, especially, I mean, I'm exactly the same age as these kids. Like the episode aired like a few days after my 36th birthday. And when I was 17, that wasn't happening.
Yeah, I do not recall this being a thing. Granted, I was probably not going to be going out to stay with any significant others until well into college, but
me too.
But if that had come up, I'm pretty sure my parents would say, the hell you are.
I remember in like 2003, I wasn't allowed to sleep at Rob's house and I was in college.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But we're also girls. I think it's different for guys.
Yeah, it's true. Like if Kate had wanted to go somewhere, it probably would have been different rules.
Yeah. And then he's like, I'll sleep on the couch. Don't worry. And I was like, oh, OK, yeah, I believe you.
I probably believe it about Randall. I'm not sure I believe it about Kevin.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Randall's girlfriend, P.S., are we ever going to find out anything about her? Or is she just exist to like sit there and like look concerned and hold his hand?
And do a ghost parody.
Yeah, it was.
That was weird.
It was very weird and very awkward, too. I feel like they've been dating for like 5 minutes and then to have this dropped on her. It's got to be a lot.
That definitely has to be a lot. I don't think that we're going to see very much of her. We're, you know, months from graduation or I can't tell if we're months from graduation or a year from graduation.
I think if it's January and they're talking about college, they must be months from graduation.
But the timeline doesn't really make sense.
Well, if they were born in 1980.
That's when I was born. I graduated in 1998. And
So you're right. They must have graduated
in 1998 because it started in the fall, which is what my birthday was. So we all turned 36 together or we were born together and like September-ish. And because it's pretty spot on with the timeline in real time.
Yeah, they seem to be pretty careful about that. You're right.
Yeah. So I feel like did I graduate when I was I did. I graduated when I was 17. So maybe it is 1998.
Yeah.
So or 1997. I'm sorry. No, it's 1997. I don't know. I don't do math. So I'm getting confused.
it does seem confusing. I think they must be seniors in high school because they're all talking about colleges.
Yeah.
So they might have fudged the timeline a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I think.
Then it's 1998 and they're 17 years old.
Yeah, I think it is meant to be 1998.
Yeah.
The night that Jack dies.
Right.
Is like January 1998.
And they made it very clear he died when they were 17. So it does make sense. So it's 1998 and they're graduating this year. They're 17. Because yes. I graduated when I was 17.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Woohoo, I did math.
Yay, math. Okay.
I'm no Randall.
No, we'll leave all of the like weather futures to Randall. All right. So I got one last question here. We had a lot of questions about the flash forward, and I think it's a good note to end on. Jessica Frey wants to know, what are your predictions for Kate and Kevin's futures now that flash forwards are a thing?
See, this, I don't like that. Like, I don't think I want to see a Kevin and Kate flash forward because there's so much meat left with what's now.
That's true. But you have to assume we're going to get them.
I don't like it. But I think everyone's going to have their happily ever after.
Yeah, I assume they must. And I think for Kate, it's probably going to be because she's been talking so much about motherhood and it's kind of a sore subject for her. And it's also kind of an entirely too neat of a bow to slap on it. I assume Kate's happy ending involves having a baby.
Yeah. And you know what? They're going to act fast on that if it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty soon.
Actually, you know what? I do like this because let's say they have a baby. It's a girl. And we're going to see, you know, a different dynamic of now Kate being the mom. And now she's going to have a daughter, and her yep. relationship with her mother is going to change. And the way that, you know, the way that she grew up feeling about her mother is really going to come into play.
Well, there you go.
I wrote it.
I think you wrote it. I'm sure like all of the writers on This Is Us, they're listening to our podcast. They're taking copious notes.
Obviously.
Well, and it's interesting to me. It made me think a lot about another kind of corny drama that was very tear jerky that I got very shockingly into for many years. It was a little show on ABC Family called Switched at Birth.
I've never seen that, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, they went on a lot of tangents. They had a lot of flash forwards and they had a lot of flash sideways. And so they would have an episode like the premise was that these two girls had been switched in the hospital. And then one girl grows up to be raised by this upper class family and goes to private school and has every advantage. And then the switch partner is raised in a rough neighborhood by a single mother. And she's deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find out about each other and they all move in together so they can get to know each other. And then so they had all these shows about like, what if they hadn't been switched? Or what if the rich family had taken custody of both daughters? And what if the other one was deaf? And they went on this. They milked this hard for many, many seasons. And I could definitely see This Is Us doing at least one flash sideways where we look at some other possible reality for them.
Yeah,
and I don't think I like that.
I don't think I like that either. I'm barely coming on to the flash forwards. Yes, I don't think I like the sideways, but I'm sure yeah. they'll make it interesting. I love the flashbacks, though.
It's true. I think we could spend so much more time in the past.
I love the flashbacks. I feel like it does bring me back to my own childhood because that's when I grew up. So it makes me feel.
Yeah, and I mean I'm only a year older than you are, so it's the same for me.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the, like, whenever they show Kate at 13 wearing crushed velvet, I'm like, I remember that. I think yeah. I had that outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's a lot of feels. But, I mean, feels are what this show does best,
That's
right?
what it does best. And that's what it's good at. And that's what it's going to continue doing. And that's why we love this show.
That's right.
And so I'm a tough critic.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for Nicole to love a show, it's got to be pretty good.
Yeah. And to podcast about it.
Indeed. Like when I heard that you wanted to do this podcast, I said to Rob, it's got to be me. Like this is what I was meant to take the lead on. And I hope that this has been a fun listen for all of you out there. We would love to get your feedback on what you think of the show so far, where you think it's
Well, let's
heading.
Rephrase that. Let's get your positive feedback.
Yes. Let's get your positive feedback on our podcasting, but we don't care how you feel about This Is Us itself. Like we would love to hear everything you think of that.
If you're listening to this podcast, I would assume that you really like the show.
Yeah, I would assume so. Nobody gets an hour 20 into a podcast about a show they hate.
Unless they just love us.
Yes. Well, that's true. That's that's a big draw.
Yeah.
But we would love to hear from you. Again, if you are a patron of Rob as a Podcast, we have threads for that in our Facebook groups. And you can also hit us up on Twitter. You can reach me at Haymaker Hattie, and you can reach Nicole at...
Nicole Cess What?
That's CES, right?
CES, yes. It's a little play on words, guys.
Yes. So we love that. And Nicole, have you thought of a hashtag for this episode? I'm putting you on the spot so I don't have to think of one.
I know, Rob always does this to me too. And then when I say it, he's like, no, that's terrible. Let's just go with fugly crying.
Fugly crying, I think it's perfect.
Yes.
So if you got all the way to the end, we'd love to hear all about your thoughts for the past, present, and future, the flash forwards and the flashbacks and the flash sideways of This Is Us. Tweet it all to us with the hashtag fugly crying. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. And thank you so much, Nicole Sestrudino, for being here with me and talking about this.
Oh, thank you so much. And then just, you know, a PSA, everybody, check your smoke detectors. Put those batteries in.
And get a new crock pot. I'm going to go online right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go online right now, replace my crock pot.
You know what? I hate George more than I hate Miguel. But that's a whole nother, spiel there.
Yeah, we'll get there. I can't fully hate anybody named George. But
yeah, so because you have a cutie named George.
I do, but, you know, if he gave me a crock pot, I'd have a hard time getting rid of it.
I hope it's just not faulty. Okay. And if it's 20 years old, maybe you should throw it out.
Indeed. Like, just replace your crock pots, everybody.
Yeah.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. And I'm sure we will catch you again on other podcasts.
Bye, guys.
Bye.